Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Hey, good morning to you. It's 908 on KDXU. I'm Andy. Thank you for tuning in. It's going to be a beautiful day today with a high in the high 60s. I love that. And I know another person that loves that is Emily. Emily Merkley is here. She is president and CEO of the Washington County Board of Realtors. Hi, Emily. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Thanks for coming on the show today. It's good to see you.
Thanks for having me. Yeah,
this was a program set up by Mello. You got the right mic over there. You got to turn it on first. So, is number two on? What about the green button in the middle? It worked a minute ago. We just tested it.
Is it working?
There you go.
There she is.
Hi, Mello.
I'm good. Just a little technical difficulties.
So, boy or girl? I got to know.
My daughter is having a boy.
Okay. She had to drive up to Provo on Saturday for a gender reveal.
Oh,
now,
that's
I remember
exciting.
The old days where you got a phone call and they said, yeah, we're having a boy or a girl or whatever.
Or and, we had a boy or girl. And, like, it was okay.
Yeah.
Wait.
And now it's like, we got to have a big thing and there's balloons and people are setting off bombs and whatever. And yeah, but it is, what'd you say, is it a girl?
It's a boy.
It's a boy, it's a boy. Okay.
This will be the third grandson, so well, I'm
congratulations.
Excited.
Yeah. Congratulations to Mello. Appreciate that. And Mello, thank you for being instrumental in getting Emily here.
Yeah, she's amazing. You guys are going to love her.
Okay, I already do. She's amazing. Yeah, I've only known her for 5 minutes, but Emily, it's good to have you. Aww. Tell us what, first of all, tell us about yourself, married kids, where you're from, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so I married my husband, Chris. I have one daughter, mm-hmm. Brielle.
Brielle, okay.
You know, we teased Brielle because about 4 years ago, she left Cache Valley, which is where we were living before moving mm-hmm. to Washington County, and she came down to Southern Utah to go to school. And when I got offered this job, I had to promise her, I'm not trying to follow you as you leave home.
A little stalking of your daughter. Huh?
Right? Right. But no, but this opportunity came up and I moved down here about 2.5 years ago to run the local realtor association here in Washington County. And my husband is moving his business down here as well.
He's okay. What kind of business is
he? He's a general contractor. So both in real estate.
Okay. Awesome.
So he's going to start by building our house first. At least now, that's what's on the schedule.
I was reading your bio. You said you tolerate Hank. I'm guessing Hank is your dog?
He is.
Okay.
He's an English bulldog.
Okay.
So probably the dumbest breed out there. And if you ask my husband, he was a birthday gift, but I'm pretty sure I said no multiple times that day.
That's how that works.
Yeah. So it was kind of a tricky way to get him in the family. So
my dad always tells a story about when my daughter was, or when my sister was going to be born. He said, he got a new job, came home and told his wife, and she was all excited. And she said, now that you have a new job, is it okay if we have another kid? This would have been their fifth.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, yeah, that'd be okay. And she's like, good, I'm pregnant. So, yeah, that's the kind of way that works sometimes.
It is.
And you're originally from Salt Lake County, Murray High School?
Murray High School.
Okay, I went to West Jordan, down the road there.
Not too far.
Yeah, and how did you end up in Logan, and how long were you there?
We were there for about 16 years,
okay.
And it really came down to my husband and I were living in, we like to call it Lower Sugar House, but it was really South Salt Lake at the time.
Yeah.
And we wanted out of Salt Lake. It just felt like it was getting too big, too fast, you know?
So we were there too when we were newlyweds. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we took off to Cache Valley where I started in real estate. It's when I first got my license and started selling as an agent. I did that for about 5 years, and then the job at the board office opened up, and it was a great fit for me, and that's what I've been doing ever since, and I love
it. Well, there's two things you don't do if you're in the realty business. You don't show a home in July or August in St. George, and you don't show a home in January, February in Logan, right?
You know, it's funny because, you know, people from here, as I moved down here, people would say to me, well, what do you do in the wintertime? And I said, the same thing you do in the summer. We just stay inside.
Yeah. And it's really true.
Right.
It's really true.
Right.
And you've been here, what, 3 or 4 years now?
2 years. Just over 2 years.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Awesome. And how in the world, speaking of realty, did you afford a home here?
Well, I haven't yet.
Oh, you don't own a home yet?
No. Well, so we purchased a lot in Washington City near Sullivan Park.
Okay.
And we're hoping to build. But, you know, the market is crazy. When we moved here almost 2.5 years ago and bought that lot, the market was entirely different. Right. And interest rates were still low. And now they're a little bit different. So we've been sitting tight. We've been renting, which is fine. And I mean, it's not ideal. The goal is to own a home. Right.
Sure.
And we will. But we're hoping to start building. At this point, my husband does not want to start framing in the summer, so it'll likely be in the fall. But we've just been kind of waiting to see what happens with the real estate market and try to enter in at an ideal time. But is there ever really an ideal time?
Well, that's just it. And that's something that, you know, we talk about a lot in the realty business, is the fact that people still move, people still buy and sell. It doesn't, if you try to time the market, it doesn't always really, it rarely actually works out.
No. And, you know, historically speaking, I mean, we can talk often about there are a lot of challenges right now. So is the climate ideal? No, there are some challenges, but has there ever been a bad time to own a home, right? And to be a homeowner and have that benefit. And so really, you know, and Mello can speak to this and agents can speak to this, is ultimately the goal is homeownership.
Right.
More wealth is attained through homeownership, stability, educational achievements. I mean, there's so many benefits that come from owning a home. So the goal is to always transition into homeownership. And no matter what the market conditions are at that time, we just have to deal with how it is at that time, because historically speaking, it will benefit you in the long run, whether you get in today or you got into the market 2 years ago, or you're not ready to get into the market now, but maybe a year from now.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, we talk about this, and you having lived in Logan might be able to relate to this one. When my wife and I actually transferred up and finished our schooling up at Utah State University. So we lived
Aggies.
In Logan for a few years.
Yeah.
And we had a chance right toward the end of my schooling to buy a home in Cache Valley for $34,000. It was a 2,000 square foot home, but it had an acre of land and it had two outbuildings, glorified sheds. They were bigger, but glorified sheds. And because we had never owned a home before, we were in our early 20s, had one kid. We were scared to pull the trigger. And I think now, what if I had bought that home? And who knows? We don't know what life holds in store, right?
Right.
But had I bought that house now, had I bought my house that house then, what would it be worth now? How would my life be different?
Well, so my husband and I just sold about a 3,000 square foot home on just shy of an acre and a half of land before moving down here. And to put that into perspective, we purchased in 2011 for $220,000.
That was a lot of money back then.
Which was a lot of money back then. And we sold for just over $700,000. So even Cache Valley, even some of these rural parts are seeing high appreciation. I mean, we never would have expected to see that, in a short 12 years, 13 years living there.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about Emily. About the market in the state of Utah. This is a weird state because you have some rural areas where the housing, the market, it's really not that expensive, some areas. But you have areas like Cache and Washington County are pretty close to the same. Washington may be a little bit higher. And then you go up to like Summit and Wasatch counties. And the median price of a house up there is like $1.4 million.
Right.
How do, as a person who's been in Utah real estate for a couple of decades, how do you put a finger on, if someone says, how's real estate in Utah? How do you explain that to them?
Well, you can't really put a finger on it. I mean, there's, and that's why I think when we talk about and you hear kind of that slogan, real estate is local, real estate is so local. I mean, there are factors here in Washington County and in Park City that draw a lot of tourism that mm-hmm. you don't see in, say, Logan, mm-hmm. right? You have a university here. You don't have a university in Park City. You know, there's a lot of tech coming to Washington County, but that generally had stayed up along the Wasatch Front.
Yes, what do they call it, Silicon Slopes or whatever?
Yep, Silicon Slopes. And so when we look at Utah as a whole, we also still have to break it up. We can look at Utah as a whole and kind of identify how Utah is doing as a state, but Washington County is doing considerably well compared to other areas of the state, right? And so there are even where Cache Valley has slowed down substantially. If you talk to agents and mortgage lenders, there's not a lot going on. But if you talk to agents here in Washington, sure, we've seen a slowdown, which was expected with the interest rates, but not to the extent of other areas around the state. And you can kind of hone in on Park City and St. George, and there's a lot of money coming in, a lot of cash. Mm. Well, when you have cash buyers, they're not economic conditions, things like interest rates, it doesn't matter them,
yeah.
right? So they're not looking at those types of things. It's just they're ready to buy. There's opportunities, and so they do. So we still are moving. In fact, we have currently, at the start of 2024, we've only been in, 2 months, we've already seen 544 homes closed.
Wow.
And 472 homes pending. So it's...
So nearly 1,000 homes really going through the process of being bought and sold in 2 months.
Right. And I think a lot of that, towards the end of the year, there was a lot of anticipation that interest rates would lower.
Right.
And we have seen them start to go down. And we knew what would happen is as soon as they started to go down, you would see an influx of buyers to the market. And we have seen that. So that's actually, it's a pretty good start to the year for Washington County.
We talk a lot about the law of supply and demand, right? And the thing about it that people, I don't know if everybody understands this completely, but there is a housing shortage, not just in Washington County, not just in Utah, in the entire United States.
What is it, 7 million?
Yeah.
7 million housing?
And people are like, no, there's plenty of places to live. Actually, there's not, because we're growing faster than we're building, believe it or not. And even in, and I saw a statistic a couple of weeks ago, in the next, by 2030, which is, believe it or not, only 6 years away, less than 6 years away, there's a need during this decade for like 30 to 40,000 new homes, and we're only planning right now to build 20-something, 22,000.
Right. And
it's going to get worse.
And it started in the recession, the 08, 09. You know, there was so much building going on, market crashes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Builders go under, and... since that time, I think we've been very hesitant. We haven't moved with demand. And so every single year that demand continues to increase and more pressure is put on the real estate market. And, new construction homes specifically, we used to see about 20% new construction homes on our multiple listing service. And now we're seeing closer to 30, 35%, which is promising.
Yeah.
But yes, we still are substantially behind. There needs to be a lot of action taken to make up that deficit. And what people, you bring up supply and demand, what people don't realize is if the feds were to lower interest rates today,
mm-hmm.
you would have a run on the market. Right. Mm-hmm. There is
so the
pent up demand.
The
demand is there. The demand is waiting. And like I said, they're waiting for more ideal conditions. But you do that, you lower interest rates too quickly. You have this run on real estate. And what happens to values again?
Prices go up.
Prices go up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I think a lot of people are frustrated right now, a lot of young people, because they can't, because of the interest rates where they are and then the prices where they are. And they're like, well, if prices go down, I'll be able to afford a home. Interest rates go down, I'll be able to afford a home. But you mentioned prices will then go up.
And so trying
to time it is nearly impossible. But I know there are young people, my daughter, for example, who would love to own a home. Is there anything that can be done to bridge the gap? I mean, you know, the time, even if you had perfect timing, it still wouldn't be able to do it. So you have right now a little bit higher prices or a little bit higher interest rate and a little bit lower prices. If that, you know, if the interest rates go down, the prices go up. I mean, is there anything we can do for these young families?
Yeah, no, there is something that can be done. I think first, knowing that they have that goal in mind, this is what I want. This is what I want to try to do. Mm-hmm. Right. They do need to be prepared. They do need to be prepared by, you know, meeting with a loan officer. Let's evaluate our current situation. What is needed? What would it take? What would mm-hmm. a house payment look like? What do I need to prepare for so that they can make some short-term goals that get them to the long-term goal of home ownership?
Right.
They also need to be in contact with a real estate professional or a realtor, right? So that when the time comes, they know what's happening in the market. They've been in communication with an agent. The agent can be watching out for opportunities that arise. I did want to bring up that of the homes that are active on the market right now, we have almost 358 that are below 500,000. Now, 500,000 still seems like a lot, but there is still a good pocket that's closer to that $300,000 range, which is the ideal range for a lot of the home buyers that are getting into the market right now. So that's promising, right? And so really for somebody who's thinking in the next year, I want to own a home, doing those steps now, getting updated on the market, what to expect, what they need to do in terms of their finances, in terms of, you know, saving for a down payment. And with that said, too, there's a lot of incentives for buyers right now. I know the interest rate may be a little bit scary, but there are sellers willing to offer concessions to buy down rates. True. Builders are buying down rates. Utah has a great first-time home buyer down payment assistance program, $20,000. And so that's why I say, don't just sit back and wait for an opportunity
a lot of people are saying, I can't do it.
Yeah. You don't know that you can't. So talk to professionals now and see what that looks like and then make a decision. You may find out that there are opportunities there that you didn't know existed.
We had an interesting thing happen a couple of years ago. Interest rates went unbelievably low. And
crazy
most low. Of us, you know, myself included, refinanced my house at 2.something%. I forget the exact, 2.75, whatever
right.
it is. And the incentive for someone like me to ever move again is very low because I have this low interest rate.
Is there an incentive?
There's no incentive. There might be a little teen. Anyway, but very, very low. I've heard talk now of assumable loans. If you need to sell your home and, you know, and someone can't get in because the interest rate is so high, I've heard talk of assumable loans. But those are pretty rare, right?
They are rare and they can get pretty tricky.
Uh-huh.
And the reason you have to be really, really careful in that situation. And I want to be careful. I'm not a licensed agent, so I don't want to give real estate advice. I'm not legally allowed to do that, but
she is
over there and maybe she can speak to that, but oftentimes your loan will have a due on sale clause, right? And so
Means you can't do an assumable,
which
right?
means you may not be. Now at one time when interest rates were more I don't know, normal, you know, the 4.5-5%, what we would consider like a good interest rate, people were doing assumable loans and mortgage companies didn't care. But let's say you had a loan at 2.5% and you decided to move and allowed somebody to assume it, your mortgage company could call that due because they could require the new person to assume a loan at current interest rates.
Which is what they want to do.
Which is what they want because they're in the business to make money.
Yeah.
Right? So yes, assumable loans can be done, but a homeowner looking at that option should look at the terms of their existing loan to determine whether or not it can be assumed.
So if I have a young family that wants to buy a house and they look at the interest rate, they go, all right, you know, 6 or 7%, whatever, I can't do that. Is it realistic to want to try to find an assumable loan? Are there some out there? Are there many out there?
Mello, do you want to answer to that?
Turn your mic on, sweetie.
Sorry, I'm so used to mic one. There are assumable loans out there, and I've had friends that have successfully helped people get into assumable loans. You do have to talk to the lender and work it through the lender. Mm-hmm. You can't just, hey, my loan's assumable, come take it. You have to go through the right channels to get it. And another option for people going into homes is to go ahead and get the home you can afford, even if it's kind of stretching you for a while. And then as the interest rates come down, then,
fingers crossed.
Yes, they're going to. Then refinance, yeah. And then you're in a better position and you've beat the market a little bit by not waiting for all the prices to go up.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's definitely an option.
It is.
But a scary option, too, because what if they don't go down for a year or two? You know, you're right. They're going to go down eventually.
Right, but they'll let you get into what you can afford, even if it hurts a little bit. You can maybe not go to the movies and eat out all the time. Like, you can...
It is stretching. And you know, and she brings up a good point. You can refinance later. You know, especially these borrowers who are buying down their rate for a year or two, they still have to qualify based on the rate that they will ultimately have, right? The mortgage company's not going to qualify them based on the lower rate. They have to make sure they can afford that higher payment. But realistically speaking, the idea is that in 1 to 2 years, that rate will be a percent or so less, and they can refinance and get into a more manageable payment. But the reality is people are cost burdened by housing right now, where, you know, decades ago, even just a decade, two decades ago, people were spending, you know, 20 to 25% of their monthly household income towards housing. Now it's 30 to 35. Mm-hmm. And in some severe cases, even 40%. It's just, it's extreme, and it's hurting people for sure.
And it's taking two households, like two incomes to afford to live.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It really is.
You have to be nicer to your husband. It's kind of hard.
Well, and if one of you loses your job or goes part-time or something, everything changes. And is there, now, I know you're not a lender, but is there an industry number percent-wise that they'll say you just can't get the loan if it's over 30-whatever percent the debt? I don't want to get too far off in the weeds, but the debt ratio, how much of your income can you put toward a house payment?
I mean, I've heard of loan programs that will go as far as 50% debt-to-income ratio, which is huge. And that hurts. I mean, it really leaves no room for anything else, but most debt to income, they want you at 35%.
Okay.
And that includes all of your debt, consumer debt, credit cards, car payments, housing expenses.
That's why if you want a house, you better get rid of all that other stuff that you can afford
a house. But that's the challenge too. Yeah. I mean, you used to be able to get a decent car for under $10,000 and have maybe a $200, $300 payment. And now, I mean, cars are so expensive, and lending on consumer loans is so expensive too, that people are now financing $500 to $700 to $800 a month to have a household vehicle. So, I mean, it's all across the board. I mean, my specialty is housing, obviously, but all across the board, there's issues that are making it hard for families to survive in Utah.
She's Emily Merkley. We're going to have more with Emily and Mello when we come back. Right now, we've got to do a weather check here on the Andy Griffin Show. We're talking real estate today. We're going to talk about median house prices and some of the trends right now in southern Utah when we come back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, southern Utah's news talk leader.
Hey, good morning. We're talking with Emily Merkley today on the Andy Griffin Show. She is the president and CEO of the Washington County Board of Realtors. Is that a fun job? You have a good time?
I love going
to work?
I love it.
That's cool. I told my kids, I have 5 children. I told them from an early age, I said, I don't care what you do for a living. As long as you're happy, you go to work and you're happy, you have a good time. Because that's always been important to me. Which is why I take a low-paying job in radio, right? And I'm not a realtor like Miss Finlinson over there, making a big buck.
I have to work there.
Are you happy, though?
I have to work in real estate so I can afford my job at the radio station.
The peanuts we give you every day. Yeah. But at least you can put your peanuts in your Dr. Pepper, right?
Amen.
Emily, we were talking a little bit about the market. First of all, and we'll get into some affordable housing stuff in a minute, but first of all, let's talk about median price in Washington County and price per square foot, and these numbers might blow some people away. What do you got?
Mello, do you have that?
I actually sent that over
to Andy. It's about $300 a square foot for a decent house now, which is crazy.
Yes. Right now, as of February, compared to last February, our median household house price is sitting at $480,000. Okay. And about $300 a square foot. Yeah.
$300.
And what's
unbelievable.
What's shocking is that most of us would think a six-figure income, $100,000, $110,000 would be a really good income.
Sure.
But In the current market, it's not enough to afford the median.
So if I made $9,000 a month, it's still not going to get me a $600,000 house. It's not enough.
If you purchased a $480,000 home and you had 5% to put down at current interest rates right now, your mortgage payment would be sitting at about $3,800 a month.
Wow.
I know. For somebody sitting with a mortgage payment below 3%, you're thinking, my gosh. Yeah.
Well, a lot of talk has been, hey, look, if you did get that low interest rate, turn your home into a rental, and you can charge maybe double your mortgage for rent. And, you know, but the problem, of course, is you still have to live somewhere.
It is, and the problem, too, and I can speak to this because I'm currently renting, is I'm paying a high rent payment too, and it's going nowhere. That money is doing nothing for me, and it's doing everything for my landlord, right?
Right.
And so even renting, rent rates are extreme right now as well. They're higher than they've ever been.
So let's talk about affordable housing for a minute. Stockton, who is oftentimes a producer, he's our newsman here. He is currently living in his parents' house. Mm-hmm. He's 27 years old. He doesn't want to live in his parents' house. He wants to buy his own home. Problem is, you know, at his what they pay, very little they pay here at the radio station. It's not that bad, but he can't afford a house right now.
Right.
You know, are there options for him? We talked about the buy downs and some of the creative ways you can get financing, but still, you've got to be able to qualify. Talk about some of the affordable housing.
Okay, so first of all, when we talk about affordable housing, a lot of people get really frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have the people who can't afford to enter the market, and then there's that frustration. And then you have people that are already homeowners, that they hear affordability and they automatically think low income, right?
Yeah.
And we need to look at affordability in two different ways. So, of course, affordable housing refers to a specific type of housing, which is generally, you know, rental assistance targeted for low to extremely low income households. But then when we talk about housing affordability, it's a much broader term and refers to the general level of home prices comparative to the income of that area, right? And so we need to not think of when we talk about affordability as a bad word, right? Because we're looking at, well, what is affordable to the people who live and work here now? And it doesn't necessarily mean poverty or low income. And so, yes, there is a need for housing options for extremely low wage earners. But as we've established, there are plenty of people who generally make a good income, but there's no options that they can then afford, right? And that really comes down to, well, what are we doing here in Washington County? We don't have control over interest rates, right? That's going to be adjusted by the feds based on the U.S. economy as a whole. So what can we do here locally? Well, And my government officials may not like to hear me say this, but the reality is, in order to address the challenges we have here, we do have to have city and county leaders that are willing to roll back some restrictions that have been put into place by our cities that have made the cost of building too expensive, right? Mm. There are lot sizes in place. There are restrictions on how many housing units per acre, and that's all controlled by the city. There are development standards that these cities put into place that further add to the cost of construction, and the builder's right. not assuming that cost, right? It's passing it on to the end purchaser. And quite frankly, the length of time it takes any developer start to finish with a city. I had a developer once, and they're a pretty large developer here in Washington County, said that with every day that they were delayed on their development, it was costing them $15,000 in terms of, you know, the money that they had fronted, you know, right. the cost of the land, the
interest rates, and all, yeah.
everything, right? And so borrowing for them is expensive too. It's not just expensive for the mortgage borrower. It's expensive for any business borrower. So the longer these cities take to move forward these developments, the more it's going to cost the end purchaser.
Do you have any thoughts? A couple of things I wanted to ask about. First of all, the water part of it. And that, I mean, you're talking about some of the restrictions that the city places that make building more expensive. But we do live in a desert. We live in a very dry area. You know, making sure we have enough water to, you know, get all these houses, you know, so that the tap actually turns on, the toilet actually
right.
flushes
right.
Is important. Are you suggesting that we need to change the water rules a little bit or no?
No, and I think that and just so you get an idea of my job too, we try to work really closely with the cities in terms of the rights of property owners. So we obviously don't want to see anything that would infringe upon somebody's right to mm-hmm. build or own real property, or that would make it more cost prohibitive. But we also need to be smart about our climate and where right. we live and what challenges that we have faced. So we have worked with cities to put forth smart water policies that takes into account that we live in the desert, that we need to conserve water, but that also doesn't add substantially to the cost of the home.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. And I think, and if you talk to the water people, you know, especially the Water Conservancy District, they're saying, look, we've got to have, there has to be certain rules. There
yeah.
just has to be.
And that's where government can step in too. You know, they've got programs for, you know, turf replacement mm-hmm. that is making it so that people can replace their sod with turf. I've seen cities kind of restrict the square footage of sod that you can have to cut down on water waste from watering grass, things like that. So smart things, little things that they can do to encourage water conservation. So,
can I get your opinion on what, I don't even know what the initials stand for, but I know what the policy is, the PIDs, P-I-D-s, and the idea, and correct me if I'm wrong here, basically the loan is gained by the builder, and then they pass that cost on to whoever ends up buying the homes, the homeowner association or whatever. Is this a good trend, a bad trend? I know it's been instrumental in helping Hurricane expand, but I don't know how I feel about it.
Here's what's important, because you're right. Those types of opportunities do help developments expand, cities bring in development, right? So they are a necessity. Mm-hmm. Where the consumer needs to be careful is they just need to know, right? They just need to be aware. And again, that's where a real estate professional can really help guide through the process and make sure there are not any unforeseen expenses and monetary consequences when they purchase by these agents knowing. And the county does put out where those PID developments exist, but then the agent can help them and say, okay, you like this area, you like this house, this is a PID, there could be, you know, an additional cost burden, you know, things like that. So
have you seen evidence of them not revealing that right up front? Have you seen evidence of people trying to kind of, last minute, oh, by the way, there's a $200 a month PID payment?
I haven't seen it. I think people are surprised with it when they don't do their due diligence, mm-hmm. right? Because I think legally it has to be disclosed.
Sure.
Legally, HOA transfer fees have to be, or reinvestment fees. Transfer fees are a thing of the past, but reinvestment fees have to be disclosed. And that can be substantial. That can be up to 0.5% of the value of the home at closing and who pays for that.
Wow.
So again, it's what real estate professional do you have on your team to help look out for you and look out for your interests and make sure that all of those things are front and center so you can make an informed decision about whether or not you want to proceed with that purchase, whether you can afford it, whether you're willing to pay it, things like that.
Do you know if, and I'm guessing the answer is yes, they do, but do you know if banks will factor in a PID payment as part of the loan as far as, you know, your monthly debt ratio and all that?
Ooh, that's a good question. Mello, do you know the answer to that?
I believe that that is factored in.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Let's get a commercial break in. More with Emily after this.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Time flies when you're having fun. We've only got about 8 or 9 minutes left in the program. If you want to call or text me, phone number to get online, get on the show is 673-5890. And Mello's doing the board op today. Mello, looking forward. They should call just to talk to you. That's how cool you are.
I'd love to talk to them.
Yeah. And you can text me at 467-5842. Again, those are both 435 area codes. 673-5890 to call, 467-5842. To text, and we're talking with Emily. Emily, it's such a gigantic topic. What you do is so expansive. I mean, you're talking about Board of Realtors. How many realtors are there in Washington County?
In Washington County, about 1,800.
1,800. Wow. That's one realtor for every, like, what, 9 people or something
well,
like that?
And that's actually, I mean, we only have about 1,200 listings on the market right now, so far more agents than we have.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm. Of course, you have buyers and sellers.
We do, and that actually doesn't even count the rest of the state in terms of real estate licenses. They can sell across the state, right?
Yeah.
So we do have our own local MLS, SouthernUtahRealEstate.com,
mm-hmm.
And it feeds all the listings from our MLS system. But we have 2,400. Agents statewide that subscribe to our MLS system. So there's even about 600 out of area agents that sell and do business here in Washington County.
Last month there was a house that was a guy up north was actually the listing agent, but it was a house. They had a video that was bought in 1993, built and bought in 93. And never lived in.
Oh, the time capsule house.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I wrote a little story about it on 890kdxu.com. But how does that happen? It's just crazy. And then what do you do with a house like that as a realtor? You say, hey, buy this house. Everything's kind of old fashioned looking, but it's all brand new.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, what do you do as a realtor on those?
You get creative, just like they did, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, what's interesting about that house, and I did talk to the listing agent about it. He had purchased it. You know, the buyer had purchased it with the intent to use it as mm-hmm. as a home, but never furnished it, never mm-hmm. moved in, and still visited Washington County and St. George frequently.
And he'd stay in a hotel.
But would stay in a hotel because there was nothing in the home.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, kind of an interesting, very, very unique property. But we've seen kind of unique properties like that pop up around Utah in the last little bit. There was one in Logan not too long ago that picked up national buzz because of its uniqueness. And, yeah, we've got some fun stuff here in Utah.
By and large, and I know the answer to this, by and large, though, realtors in Washington County are ethical, right? They do the right thing, right? I mean, that's your job to keep an eye on, right?
Yeah, that is a component of my job. So in order to be a realtor, they have to be licensed in the state, right? That's their first eligibility requirement. But then they join the realtor organization and they have to subscribe to a code of ethics. And I often identify this as the state, the licensing division, sets the minimum standards that a licensee has to comply with. The code of ethics is the higher standard. So it requires additional ethical obligations of behavior. And then it's my job to make sure that the agents know that. I teach the ethical courses and then also enforce it.
So you're Professor Merkley.
I can be, yes.
That's cool. Of the 1,800 agents you were talking about, how many of them are really like full-time realtors versus, because everybody has a cousin or an uncle or sister or whatever, they got their license, but they're not really realtors. They don't do a whole lot of selling.
That's an interesting question. The thing about real estate is it can be what you want it to be, mm-hmm. right? There are people who get licensed and join the MLS strictly because they want to do real estate for themselves, or they're a teacher and want to supplement their income in the summertime when they have time, true. Right? Yeah. Or they need a part-time job and it provides, a side hustle, right? But when we look at Washington County, it's actually a fairly small percentage okay. that is actually full-time. This is their day-to-day business, day in and day out. And I bet that number would be closer to 400, maybe even a little bit less.
Okay. So people that is their job, mm-hmm. basically, is maybe
main source of income.
Maybe a fourth or a little less than a fourth of the ones that are licensed. Okay.
Right.
That's interesting. Very fascinating. We're down to, I hate to open this can of worms with 3 minutes left, but lawsuit about percentages that realtors get. Generally speaking, if you're buying or selling a house, you figure 3% goes to the realtor. Is that the law?
So there is no law around okay. commissions, right? And it's very interesting that this lawsuit was filed where it was too, and not in Utah. And basically the idea is that realtors are trying to fix commissions, right? That they're trying to set a
sure.
standard.
Yeah.
But antitrust laws prevent that, okay? The reality is that each individual agent has the ability to determine their fee. Okay, for themselves, for the services they provide. And like with anything, it is negotiable. I could sit, if I were an agent, I could sit with a seller and say, for my services, I want to charge X amount. And they say, well, no, I don't want to pay you X amount. I'd rather pay you this. And they can negotiate those services. And in Utah, those fees are outlined in their exclusive listing agreement. The other thing, the misconception and why these lawsuits are coming forward is because there's been this idea that the seller pays the buyer's agent, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, I've heard that, yeah.
But really, and Mello can attest to this too, when she sits down with a seller, she's going to say, and I'm just going to throw out an amount. I'm not going to say anything specific, but Mello may sit down and say, I do drone footage, I do photos, I do contract review, I do all of these services, here's my services, and I want to charge 5%. And of my 5%, I want to post that listing on the multiple listing service and offer a buyer agent commission. So really, the seller is paying the seller's brokerage, their listing brokerage. And then that listing brokerage is offering to split or divide in some way that commission that they're receiving in order for an outside agent to bring a buyer in a cooperative transaction. And again, those fees are actually identified on our buyer forms. But that's not the case in every other state. And every state is different depending on the forms laws and disclosure laws that they have within that state. Utah has been very pro disclosure for quite some time now, but that's not the same. And it was filed in Missouri, and it was filed there for a reason. So commissions are negotiable. You do have the ability to discuss that with your agent at the time they take the listing. And if you're a buyer, you have there is an opportunity when you sign that form to say to your buyer's agent, how do you get paid, right? How are you sure. getting paid in this transaction? Am I liable for any fees associated with your services, things like that?
Awesome. Sound right, Mello?
She is so smart. Yes,
she is so
correct.
Smart. Yeah, Emily, we've run out of time, but I feel like we could do like 5 shows with you and still not run out of stuff to talk about. So.
Invite me back anytime. It was a pleasure.
I will, for sure. Thank you, Emily, for coming on. Mello, thanks for your contributions
Thank
today.
You.
appreciate it. I'll be back tomorrow. McCray Hepler is going to join me. We might have a surprise guest or two as well. Thanks for listening, everybody.